Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita, as it is, from the 9th chapter, text number 27. Yat karosi yatasnasi, yat juhusi dadasi yad, yat tapasyasi kunteya, tat kuru swamadarpanam.
Translation.
Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So such a nice and simple verse, which explains to us how to live. A very simple key to life that in any situation, whatever we do, whatever we need to do, we must do it as an offering to Krishna. And that opens up the door for being ourselves and yet being in Krishna consciousness. Because it means that all the human needs are there and are recognized. Eating, mating, sleeping, defending are the natural tendencies of all living beings. So eating can be done, but as an offering to Krishna. Sleeping, equally so. Mating, even sex life, is regulated as an offering to Krishna in the scriptures, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the verse Kamusmi Bharatar Sabha, where it is explained that if one is having children, then these children are meant for becoming devotees. And one has a responsibility to also give them spiritual life, not just to have some little accident and then a child and then leave it somewhere. So in this way, it is said that Praniratta Diyavacha Sreyam Acharanam Sada, that in this life, whatever we do, everything is meant for self-realization, not just that we are spending our time to have a good time in this world. We can have a good time in this world to some extent, as much as destiny allows us. That's fine. But no sinful activities mixed in with it. That's the only point. Whatever we do, no sinful activity. Now some tendencies may be very strong within us because we are accustomed, we're habituated, and therefore we find it difficult to remain on the pure platform. So then Bhagavad Gita recommends us purification. If our tendencies are to engage in sinful activities, what are sinful activities? Sinful activities are activities described. It said, whether they are religious or irreligious, but that are activities that are not in the service of the Lord, all such activities are involved with sin. Even religious activities, if they are not dedicated in pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, then it's only regulated sinful activity. And when there's no religious activity involved, then it's pure sinful activity. The real thing. Such kind of activity is degrading us, degrading others. It is destructive to our own destiny and destructive to the destiny of others. That is sinful activity. Of course, in Amsterdam, I don't need to mention that because here everybody knows what sinful activity is. The word may be forgotten, but the activity is well known. But not only here, all over the world. Here, it's out in the open and blatant, but in other places, it may be well hidden, even in the most cultured places. There are so many sinful activities going on, even in places where people are following and are very much aware of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic scriptures. But then again, when nobody is looking, so many things are going on. So we should not have such duplicity in our life. We should conquer these tendencies in our heart and become real people, not show-bottle people, not pretenders who are trying to show off to others and make an impression, but we should be real people who really stand for some genuine quality. Years ago, I had friends here in Amsterdam who were artists and whose philosophy was to be an animal, right? And that was the most desirable thing to be, a beast, right? And I'm aware that this beastly tendency exists in everyone, right? In every human being, there is also an animal somewhere under the surface still. The animalistic tendency is certainly there, right, in everyone. And in some parts of the world, this animalistic tendency is openly expressed, and in others, it is somewhat hidden under a layer of good manners and nice dress and nice veneer. But it's there, and it's waiting to come out at times. Right? So, one cannot simply repress the animal and think that this is spiritual life. We cannot simply spend our time repressing lower qualities and lower nature and somehow or other trying to hold on to a higher prescribed way of life, which, for example, we find in Bhagavad Gita. Now, that we cannot maintain. And then we'll have moments of fall down, moments of breaking the spiritual standards. Therefore, we must look for purification. So this purification means that we must make sacrifice. Because the real problem begins with selfishness. When we are too self-centered, then we cannot follow the spirit of giving up our lower nature. So we must practice sacrifice. So this whole verse is calling for sacrifice, to do everything in sacrifice, to spend our day in sacrifice, to use all our energy, not for ourselves, but for Krishna in particular. So if we do that and make this sacrifice, then gradually our material attachment diminishes. Then we can gradually give up the tendency to leave behind these strong drives that are within us and that bind us again and again to act in a way different than is prescribed in revealed scriptures. So therefore, we recommend that everyone gets very active and does something for Krishna. Coming to the temple is certainly such a sacrifice. It's a beautiful Sunday afternoon and it's nice weather and there's plenty of places where you could go for a swim or for a little boating tour or sit on a little terrace under a parasol with cool drinks and chat and talk and do things and hold hands and look in eyes and enjoy and get ready for a cool night and so many things, right? So there's plenty that could be thought of other than making a sacrifice. But making a sacrifice means we go to the temple. And just now here, we are lending our ear to transcendental sound. So that is part of sacrifice. But every single one of our senses must be offered in sacrifice. Everything, our hands, our legs, all parts of the body, so it is said. Yes. And in the cause of that sacrifice, one can do so many things. Cook for Krishna. I hope it sounded like an empty bucket, so it wasn't so serious. It's the other sound that worries us more. When it's the full bucket, you hear, that then you know it's really fun in the kitchen. But this is just an ordinary little thing in a Hare Krishna kitchen, right? They call this a kitchen religion, and you can imagine what adventures are taking place in a Hare Krishna kitchen. It's inconceivable, and ours is super small, and the amount of foodstuffs that are being produced from that place is inconceivable. Real adventures. It's a real workshop. We also have professional drills and all kinds of things mounted there to prepare the prasadam for you. Hammers, screws, drills, all kinds of machines. It can all be engaged in the service of Krishna. That is not a problem. But we must purify ourselves. So it's very difficult to do that when you're all alone. Many people here are somehow or other connected to Krishna consciousness for a long time. Some are connected by birth. Some are connected by having been here for so many years. But still, so many are also having their weak moments, their difficulties in always following the rules and so on, and find it a struggle. So the answer to this problem is that sacrifice. It's not so much that we have to worry about how am I going to come up to a higher standard and follow all these rigid principles. The best thing to do is get involved and do voluntary service. We've just had the Rati Yatra festival, and there was plenty of service, but there is always a lot of service in the temple. And anyone who becomes absorbed in service gradually can come up to this standard that yat kurusi yat tasnasi yat juhusi dadasi yat yat tapasya vikunteya tat kurusva matarpanam, that everything can be offered to Krishna. And as soon as you do, you are liberated. As soon as you do, you actually feel freedom. As soon as you do that, some pressure disappears. The whole world is walking around with this pressure. See how many lines people have in their faces, how old they look, right? When I say that I'm 50, people say like, no, you cannot be 50, right? Because usually people of 50 have many, many lines in their faces, right? From all the pressure and anxiety. I have some lines here and there. If you get closer especially. But we sannyasis keep our privacy. So it's well hidden. Lines are there, but not the constant anxiety. Because one becomes liberated and free. Right? Actually, if we are living according to the directions of Krishna, now no longer that burden of karma. It is said that the animals in the jungle are very afraid. They look in front, they look behind, up, down, everywhere, because danger is always lurking everywhere. But we think we're living a very peaceful life. But it is actually not so much a fact. As soon as we step out of the door, you have to have your eyes open. First of all, there can be something lying on the pavement and you wouldn't want to step in that, right? So you have to have one eye on the ground. Then, okay, cross the bicycle path, cross the road, and so on and so on. Or jump in the car, look in the mirror. So many times in the day, we also have to be aware. The whole world is a life of pressure, a life of anxiety. I'd like to tell the stories of New York because it's such a city. One man from New York came to Amsterdam and he said, it's such a nice place, so calm and so peaceful. Right? And he said, it's really nice. And then I was in New York and I went in the subway and there was this black man sitting with a big poster, and it was a skeleton with a cowboy hat on smoking a cigarette. And on the poster it said, first they made us picket
And now they want us to smoke it. I wanted to buy the poster, but I thought I was afraid to flash money in the subway. So I didn't do. And then I saw a class of school children walk by with their teacher. And the teacher said, "Go, go, 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 go." Which I thought was a real good teacher. Perfect education for New York, right? Go, go, go. Right? That's New York, right? So I was saying, these kids are really getting good education. Very, very, very well. So we're living in a life where it's so easy to get caught up in the externals. From childhood, before you know it, right? You roll into the educational system. We're here in Holland. For a good part of the year, we go to school when it's dark, and we come home when it's dark, right? All throughout the winter months like that, you never see the light of day. And you're just in your school and being educated. And, okay, you go through so many years of that only to get the opportunity to go to university. And the government gives you a loan. And then after, you have to pay that back for so many years, right? 12 years, 15 years or more. Pay back your loan after studying. By then, you get the loan for the house, so the next loan. And in this way, you'll be finished paying loans when you're just about 60. Then you have 5 years. You can help your children with the loans that they have. And by that time, you are ready to enter into an old people's home, right, where you can live from your pension and everything you've paid for all these years. And life went by, right, and we never actually had a choice. Not a single day did we have a choice. Our whole life, actually, there was a script written, and one simply had to go along with the whole thing. Wow, it's dark, huh? And but quite cool. Dark is cool. So in India, they're often sitting in dark rooms to make it more cool. So Krishna consciousness makes all the things of the world very small and insignificant. It is said that as we are becoming more and more interested in Krishna and begin to make sacrifices for Krishna, gradually all these material arrangements and needs, they become less and less important, and we actually begin to feel them as a disturbance. And we begin to realize that I should keep this as simple as possible. Prior to that, like just as we were driving on the way, we saw someone in like an American, a super huge American golden pickup van with what was on the side again in big letters? The Roadrunner or something like that, huh? Roadrunner and King of the Road on it. The king on the back, the king. And he looked so good, you know, such a thing. Huge, huge American thing. And really like a show thing. And when he drove past, we went like, hey. And he went like... for us. And we had a whole discussion, what will he become in his next life? Huh? It was an interesting case. You know, you think like, what would he become, right? Gauranga thought he would become a very colorful tropical bird, right? Some of us thought he might become an American car salesman or something like that, or the king, whatever. We get so absorbed in these things, and but as we are making sacrifice for Krishna, we realize that all these kind of things are simply a waste of time and energy. This is the problem. We have only so little energy. How much energy do we have? Very little. Therefore, whatever little energy we have, we have to save a good portion for Krishna. Already we have to use so much for our body. So much to rest, so much to dress, so much to feed ourselves, so much time just for our physical comfort, to clean the house, to all these things, right? Get some money, right? And finally, when that's all finished, right, then we have a little time for ourselves, if we really look at it, right? All this time spent just for surviving. So when the basic survival need has been covered, then whatever time is left, that's for us. So therefore the advice is, in spiritual life, keep all these material things as simple as you can, so that we have more time left. If things are simple, then we have more time left. And all that time we can use for spiritual activity. We fill all that time and use it for Krishna consciousness. We can do that in so many ways. We are here on a Sunday feast after a Saturday festival, and we want to keep on celebrating, actually. Tomorrow morning, again here at 4:30, we'll be dancing around the room, right? We don't just do it for show here on Dam Square on the stage. Or we don't just do it now here on the Sunday feast just to show off that we're into it. No, tomorrow morning at 4:30 we're going to do it again, right? Every day. Because the celebration goes on. Krishna is the most amazing person. This celebration, the more it is celebrated, the more it comes to life. Like 1 year, I was in South Africa, and there was a South Indian temple with a deity of Venkatesh, right? A deity which we find in South India, especially in Tirupati, and even in some other places there are similar deities. There in South India the deities are very large. In South Africa the deity was smaller. And they also had a chariot festival, just like we had yesterday. And it was a beautiful chariot, large and wood and everything, very nice. And the people were also pulling the chariot with ropes. But there was no kirtan. There was no kirtan. They were only pulling the chariot. So the whole mood was totally different than what we did yesterday. Because the mood was, we're pulling the big chariot. It's big. It's really big. It's heavy. And every 10 minutes, the people sat down to rest for a few minutes. And then again, they would pull the big chariot. And we were invited to come and do a kirtan. And we had great fun. And it took us, we were dancing, but the other people were huffing and puffing. Unlike what we did yesterday, where we had a great kirtan and the chariot also came along somehow or other. Everyone pulled it, but our mood was not we're pulling the big chariot. Our mood was like, we're going to fly through the street and dance and sing. And yeah, pull that chariot, just pull it along, right? Nobody thinks about it that much. So a totally different mood. It took us about 1 hour to get this particular crowd also in the mood of kirtan. Slowly we were dancing in front of them, and gradually some also began to catch on. And then it got lighter. So if we become absorbed in glorifying Krishna, in singing and dancing, in just making festivals for Krishna, or worship of Krishna in a temple, whatever it is, wherever it is, immediately all the hardships of life disappear. Somehow or other, all that begins to disappear in the background, and it all shrinks in size. And that's why we should just get into that, really full on. That will solve all our problems. It will really do so. And if we think that, no, but I am different, it only means that we are not getting deep enough into the sacrifice. Yeah. If you think, I've tried it, Krishna consciousness, I tried to put myself into it, but it didn't happen for me. The material desires still were so strong that I had to kind of make a two-pronged agenda, one for Krishna and one for taking care of my own material desires. Now you're making a mistake. What simply happened is you didn't go deep enough in the glorification of Krishna, and therefore the material desires didn't shrink enough. That is actually the system. So we must somehow or other not worry. We can go deep into this sacrifice. If you have a big, passionate material desire, then you have to make a big, passionate offering to Krishna. Right? That's the system. If you have like a material desire that is as big as an elephant, well, then you have to offer Krishna at least an elephant. Right? In other words, whatever our state of mind is, right, we have to offer exactly that much to Krishna. So according to our nature, we just engage that. So it's not a matter that, well, I think that there are different kinds of people. People who are very peaceful and calm, they are probably the natural monks and the natural renunciants. And people who are more passionate and have more energy, etc., they are probably meant for maybe being a little bit in the world and a little bit in Krishna consciousness. No, actually no. If you're passionate, be passionate for Krishna. Right? If you're stubborn, be stubborn for Krishna. Don't give up, you know. If you're tough, you know, and you have tattoos, at least have some Krishna conscious ones. Right? So whatever it is, simply translate it into Krishna. So it's not that you have to become somebody else. One of the greatest fears in regards to Krishna consciousness is that people are afraid to lose their identity, right? Well, we have tried that process. I admit, we have tried brainwashing people. We have tried to make them lose their identity, right? We've tried everything. We've tried to take them away from their known environment. We've tried to shave their hairs off, and we've tried to really make them forget who they were. But we found out that it always came back. Right? You can't be somebody else. Right? So being a devotee also means you're still yourself. You have to be yourself and engage that in the service of Krishna. Right? Just that energy that we have, that we use, and all the way, we give it all. And if we do so, then we don't need anything else. We become free. Right? And this is the perfection of life, really. Right? Krishna consciousness is better than material life. Material life, have a smoke, have a drink, you know, have something with someone else's wife, is not the nicest. Right? But Krishna consciousness means being free. Free from being destructive towards ourselves, free from being destructive towards others, trying to actually benedict everyone. And therefore, after some time, at the end of the day, one can say, yes, I did something good with my day. At least I tried. Right? And the more we give ourselves, the better it becomes. So this is freedom. Freedom from anxiety, freedom from headache. And this is what we offer. And this is what Bhagavad Gita offers. So it's not some artificial process. It's actually a process of curing foolish bad habits and then getting into the positive activity. Yesterday we were not the only chariot in town. Right? I saw another chariot come by at Dem Square, and that was a whole bunch of people sitting on an oval-shaped bar with pedals, right? And the barkeeper is behind, you know, and they are pedaling along, right? Bicycle pedals, and they're all cycling on the pedals, sitting on the bar stools and the thing, and the whole bar drives through the streets, right? And meanwhile, the bartender is handing out beer. And this is like, and they thought that they had a far out chariot. But they didn't have anywhere near as much fun as we had. And not anywhere near as much. Because our fun was really not artificial. Our fun was just give yourself all the way and sing and dance for hours and hours. And just being carried by the mantra. So this you have to taste, actually. And if you get into this, then you see that Krishna consciousness is very nice. It's a spontaneous thing, which is very appealing if you get on that spontaneous platform of giving it your everything. So that's this verse. In any situation, let's just give our everything. And it's for people from all over the world. It can be done anywhere. We can do it here in Amsterdam. We just take an ordinary little house, turn it into a temple. You can do that also in your home. Right? Nobody stops you from bringing Krishna into your home. There's no laws against it. You can make an altar and you can make it as beautiful as you like. Most people have a house that is about the same size as this temple, so there's no reason not to have. And you can even invite people in your house, even if it's half the size of this temple. We'll invite half the people that are in this temple, and we'll still have a nice program in your house. So anyone who wants to invite me to come to his house, I promise I will come. It may take a little time, because I'm already booked up, but I will come for a program. Yeah. So if anyone wants a Swami in his home, you can book the Swami today. Yeah? Okay. So this is our latest Sunday feast offering called Book a Swami. He'll bring some friends as well, right? Book a Swami now, you know. And we'll have the kirtan of the year in your house. The neighbors will love it too, only for once. And we'll bring prasadam and everything. You have to give a donation though. That's part of the tradition. But you won't mind that. I'm sure you don't mind making an offering. Because it says here, yad karosi, yad asnasi, yad juhusi, dadasi, yad, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, should all be for Krishna. So in that way, no problem. And so we can do it anywhere, any place. We can also do it outside. We can do it all over the world. Krishna consciousness is a process for every single person in the world. And that makes it very nice and practical. So it's also for you. And this is the secret. Whatever we do, let's do it to glorify Krishna, who is the origin of everything. I don't need to make a very, very long lecture. You can also ask some questions if you have, and I'll try to answer. So does anyone have a question? Yeah.
It was something that I didn't know with a friend of mine, and that was the approach of how Krishna consciousness toward other religions. I mean, can we see, for example, the biblical religion as in some way called the Vaishnavas as well?
So a devotee is called a Vaishnava. And the question, and a Vaishnava means a worshipper of Vishnu. Therefore, we call devotee Vaishnava. So the Vaishnavas, he says, can we see every practitioner of any other religion ultimately also see as a Vaishnava? Why do you want to then? You can make the definition broader, right? And say, in one sense, everyone is worshipping the same Supreme Lord, or an expansion of the Lord, or the energy of the Lord. So either directly or indirectly, everyone is worshipping the Lord. Even that man who was sitting in his huge, big golden, I mean, the biggest golden pickup truck with far-out music and special The King number plates and Roadrunner on the side and so many things. Even that man was also worshipping Krishna's energy. So is he not a Vaishnava? So it just depends on your level of advancement. If you are a topmost devotee of the Lord, you will only see Vaishnavas everywhere. You will see everyone is a devotee of the Lord, except one, me. I am not. Right? So this is just a matter of definition. In one sense. So it depends how you want to deal with the world. Generally speaking, it is said that the preaching movement either goes up to the Madhyam Adhikari platform or down to the Madhyam Adhikari platform. There are three levels of devotees: Kanista Adhikari, the new devotee; Madhyam Adhikari, intermediate devotee; Uttama Adhikari, topmost devotee. The topmost devotee sees everyone is a devotee of Krishna because everyone is serving Krishna directly or indirectly. Nobody can do anything outside of Krishna because everything that exists is Krishna. Topmost devotee. It's said for the lowest devotee, he is having difficulty in seeing. He sees a lot of maya everywhere, illusory energy and sin and Kali Yuga and darkness and a very little bit of Krishna, and he's somewhat on the depressed side, thinking that, boy, is Krishna consciousness going to survive or is it going to extinguish one of these days? Right. I hope it's going to make it, and I hope I'm going to make it too. Right. The intermediate devotee feels inspired, strong, and has a strong sense of preaching this Krishna consciousness everywhere. He makes a distinction. Those who are directly worshipping Krishna are devotees. Those who are not are non-devotees. He's trying to get everyone to directly worship Krishna, not just the energy of Krishna. So it is said that for the sake of the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya, the topmost devotee will also adopt that kind of outlook. Although he's still topmost, he will adopt that outlook. Devotee, non-devotee. Those who serve the indirect energy of Krishna. Non-devotee. Those who serve Krishna directly. Devotee. So this is our purpose. So for common purposes, we are saying Vaishnavas refers to those who are worshipping Krishna directly. But if you want to extend the definition from the Uttama Adhikari platform, my blessings you have. Yes, Sri Vasubhu. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Ah, I don't know who pressured them. Yeah, I understand. I think that in one sense, guilt has two causes, I would say. Guilt may have a social cause, where one particular group of people imposes feelings of guilt upon others. But I think there's a deeper level of guilt, which is more fundamental even within ourselves already, without any social imposition whatsoever. Even without scriptural knowledge, right? There is such a thing. Because every man has a conscience on his own, right? Just from our own, from within, there is a conscience. And sometimes you just do things and you feel that this is not right. I should not do this, should not have done this, etc. So feelings of guilt, in one sense, are also a natural part of our being, just like a feeling of pain. And I think guilt and pain are similar. And just as pain is also like a warning, right? When there's like a pain in the leg, you have a look and you just see that there's a huge cut or something. It's also a warning, take care of this leg now. And in the same way, guilt has also a positive thing as to check us from engaging in certain destructive activities, destructive to ourselves and others. So there's a self-preserving element in guilt. So this is maybe the best part of guilt. So a little bit of guilt is not bad. Some guilt in that sense is right. But we amongst devotees, we are following rules and regulations, and four regulative principles are recommended in the Vedic scripture to come to sinless behavior. It is said, panam, jutam, striyam, sunam, chatur adharmas chata vida, that these four, meat eating, taking intoxicants, taking flesh and gambling, these four are the pillars of a religious life. So they are condemned in scriptures, and the result of them is suffering and guilt. So now we have a movement which is proposing sinless life. So it's not our policy to make everyone feel so guilty that he becomes totally discouraged, right? And that there are many people connected to this movement, and not everyone is able to follow these four regulative principles. We didn't grow up with it, you know. No meat, fish, or eggs, no alcohol, no coffee, tea, no cigarettes, never anything, nothing. It's very difficult. No illicit sex, right? No free sexual relationships. Very, very difficult. No gambling becomes maybe easier for many. So these principles are very rigid. And many people who are interested in Krishna consciousness, who like the Bhagavad Gita, who like the temple, who like the devotees, cannot follow all that. So should those who can follow it impose feelings of guilt upon these others all the time? You are a second-class citizen. You are a sinful wretch. How dare you walk on the face of the earth? Aren't you ashamed if you have all this knowledge and still you, living boil, are walking here amongst us, you know? Like that, we can impose so much on people. When those who are following the principles are treating others who are not, but are interested in Krishna consciousness, the so-called congregational devotee, that you, as you named him, that's not mature, right? That's not encouraging, and that is not loving dealing, right? A little subtle hint, you know, to remind someone, like, you know, do you really have to smoke that joint? You know, watch out for the Yamadutas, whatever. Sometimes may also be in its place, right? Because if I'm somebody's friend, then it doesn't mean that I should always just smile at him and say, oh yes, you know, nice. Sometimes I may also have to say, what are you doing? Right? That also helps. But if we constantly remind those who are interested in Krishna consciousness and cannot follow all the principles about how they should be guilty, yes, then they leave, feel discouraged. And I think then the preaching is also wrong, and I think then the devotees who are practicing are also having a wrong meditation. Because the way I see it is this, is that our devotional service to Krishna, making the sacrifice for Krishna, doing things for Krishna, should be in the front. And when that devotional service is in the front, then the regulative principles follow behind, automatically, naturally. Then you'll start feeling, yes, this is better, now I want to do it. It will come. And that is our process. Our process, we are not the International Society for Four Regulative Principles, right? We are the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So Krishna in the front, the regulative principles in the back. And otherwise we become a club. How many, you know, I used to visit some Tibetan library in India, where the Dalai Lama's visit was before Krishna Consciousness. And one thing that turned me off was I visited that, and then there was a group of people around it, and they were saying, one typical conversation in the Tibetan chai shop in the morning, right? Sitting there with hot Tibetan breads, and we're talking, and someone says, are you going to the library? I said, yes. Are you already studying Tibetan? No. Oh, are you following the meditation courses? Yes. Which one are you doing? The beginner's one or the second one, right? Oh, the first one. Oh, yeah, that's really difficult. I remember when I used to do that, you know, and this whole kind of status thing, right, where people are just into being part of something. How many, and so we can do it here also. How many regulative principles are you following? Two. Oh, I follow three. Oh, you follow only three. I follow 3.5. I 3.75. No, really? Yes. I do 4 all the way already for 20 years, you know, right? So, you know, We don't have to walk around talking about tattoos. We don't have to tattoo the four rags, you know, all over our arms and chest, etc., and plod along like that. Krishna in the front. Let us do something for Krishna. Let us talk about Krishna. The four regulative principles follow. Because that will take away our interest in all these other things gradually. So therefore, otherwise Krishna consciousness becomes an artificial process. But if we put Krishna in the front, it becomes a natural process. And that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be a natural process, and only a natural process will survive. Right? Not that we are all going to say, okay, everybody ready? Take a deep breath. We're all going to follow these four regulative principles. I know it's difficult, but we're going to do it. You know, and if you can't do it, you're going to burn in hell. Ha. Not that one. Or varieties on the theme. Thanks for the question and bringing out this point, because it's, I think, it's a very relevant point and a very nice point that we want everyone to hear. So anyone else want to bring out something? Yeah. How can you what? Offer? Okay. How can you offer the way you make money to Krishna? Well, number one is that that means the work has to be clean. So it should not involve things that are against Krishna's instruction. So you can't become a butcher or work in any other way which is connected with meat eating. Sorry, no more dealing of dope. I know it's easy money, but unfortunately it doesn't work, right? Yeah, you can't go out at night anymore and burglar different houses. Right? To get some quick income there.